This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
To Earl Forsey for getting us up to date. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Always appreciate you guys listening to the show. Every day at noon, we give you a blitz, two or three teams in town you care about, jam it into a segment, get you a lot of intel, ideally during your lunch break. So let's get right to it. We'll start you off on the gridiron.
The Washington Football Team.
Matthew Paris of the Washington Times covers the burgundy and gold. Matthew, Dontrell Inman has been signed. Yesterday it was kind of a rumor that he was getting close to a deal with the team. So the veteran wide receiver's been all over the place in the NFL. He going to make the roster? What kind of role do you think he'll have here in D.C.?
Yeah, I think he's definitely a strong candidate to do so. You kind of look at his attributes, and he fits the prototype of what Ron Rivera likes in a receiver. He's tall. He's 6'3". He's versatile. He has some experience playing the slot, though it's mostly outside. And he is really someone for the position group that, you know, wide receiver is so young. This is an experienced guy. He can play on the outside. I think he'll definitely compete for the starting spot opposite Terry McLaurin, and who knows if he wins it, but I think he's definitely a factor to make the roster.
Matthew, I initially kind of took it as, oh, that's so nice. That's neat for Alex Smith. I no longer think that anymore. The more I hear about Alex Smith, the more I'm like, okay, enough about Alex Smith. I'd like him to be in the room, a good guy, great mentor. I need him to not be a threat to play. What are you hearing, and what's the latest?
Yeah, I mean, he's he's coming along really great from the sounds of it. Ron Rivera said today that he was pleasantly surprised with how Smith is coming along. They went through 4 days of workouts last week. Now, of course, Smith can't practice with the team yet, but he can work with the trainers. And Smith went through all the motions. He was dropping back, doing the same types of work that the quarterbacks were doing, but just to the side. He looked really fluid, Ron Rivera said, and that most importantly, his leg responded well to each day's workout. So, you know, no setbacks there. And if he continues, who knows? I mean, maybe he'll be cleared to practice, and that would be a huge step.
Yeah, so what are we talking about then? I mean, that would be a huge step, but what's the end game? Is the end game for him to be on the roster? Is the end game for him to be a backup? He's not going to be able to play in games, would he?
Right. That's the thing. I would imagine that it would be, you know, he would, that it would be impossible for him to. Not impossible, but it would be unlikely. But, you know, they haven't said that. They've said if he is free to practice, that he will be in the starting mix to be the starter. He'll be part of the competition. So they've said all the things on the surface that, hey, don't discount Alex Smith here. Now, that may be hard to believe, and I'll believe it when I see it, but right now they're acting as if, you know, Smith is part of the plan.
Matthew, what tight end currently on this roster leads the tight end group in catches?
I would imagine if Logan Thomas maybe, but he's on the COVID-19 reserve list right now, and so he has to pass the protocols to get off it. You have Jeremy Sprinkle, who's returning, and he has some pass catching ability. It's not the most inspiring option. And then you have Richard Rodgers, who played only in one game in Philly last year. Rivera really likes kind of what he did in Green Bay, but Rodgers has spent the last couple of years with the Eagles, and hasn't done much. So it is a really, really thin position. And there's Thaddeus Moss as well, but he's more of a blocking tight end. So it's a really good question, and one I just don't necessarily have the answer to, but it's definitely, I think it's probably Washington's weakest position by far.
Matt, Josh Harvey Clemens opted out. Was he going to make the roster at linebacker anyway? How big of a loss is that? And then what other players are considering opt-outs that you've heard?
I don't think it's a huge loss. I mean, he's a veteran guy who was kind of versatile. He was a pretty good special teams player, but, you know, based on the numbers games, he was probably on the outside looking in, so he had to do what was right for his family. As far as other opt-outs, Rivera hasn't really said anything. I haven't necessarily heard anything, but the deadline, I believe, is Thursday, so there could be maybe one or two more, but so far, Caleb Brantley and Josh Harvey Clemens are the only ones.
Matthew, I like Haskins an awful lot. I liked him last year, and I like him now. Pretty adverse situation that he walked into last year, and even now, again, with the pandemic and I think a lack of talent, especially on the left side of the offensive line, the tight end spot we alluded to, and if Inman's their second-best wide receiver, they might be in trouble. What are fair expectations for him this year?
Well, first off, it's just for him to really act like the leader, to be that guy in the room, to maybe use that cliche. They really wanted him to take a step forward, and Rivera so far has been really pleased with the way he's gone about his business. You know, Rivera said today that Dwayne Haskins was not far behind Alex Smith in terms of learning the playbook. And that kind of set off an alarm bell for people whether, oh man, is it concerning that Dwayne Haskins doesn't know as much as Alex Smith? But Rivera, caveated that with he's done everything asked. He's really put in the work and really knows the playbook. And, I think they're really pleased with how he's developed so far.
Matthew, thanks for the time on the Blitz, buddy. We appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's talk some puck. Caps back in action yesterday, went to overtime and eventually lost in a shootout to the Lightning. Samantha Pell covers the Caps for the Washington Post. Samantha, why don't we just start with your reaction to the game and their performance. What'd you take out of it?
Yeah, I think it was typical Caps hockey. They kind of looked like they looked right before the pause. Obviously, offense wasn't completely firing and on all cylinders before the pause. Defense was a little shaky, and I thought they kind of looked the same in that first period. In the second period, they fell in a 2-0 hole, and then all of a sudden, just like the Caps had done all season, they came back. Dug themselves out of that 2-0 hole with goals from Richard Ponick and Evgeny Kuznetsov, tied the game and just brought it back to overtime. Obviously, they lost in the shootout, but it's got to be encouraging for the Capitals to basically claw their way back, all without John Carlson.
Yeah, so the two sides of a coin, right, Samantha? I mean, the way they played after that dirty goal from Ponick, where he just kind of kept whacking away, was encouraging.
Yep.
What was discouraging was it looked like Tampa had the puck the entire first period and a half. What do we take out of this? What's our big takeaway? The most recent sample or that first part?
It's kind of hard because I think in the very beginning I was like, oh no, like here we kind of go again. But then you kind of saw the life. And I think the Capitals just proved how dangerous a team they can be when pushed into a corner. And honestly, the playoffs is a whole big pushed into a corner situation. So I think the takeaways are that, this team is obviously good. They still have all the offensive weapons. And again, they did this all without John Carlson. You put John Carlson back into the lineup, and the Capitals are a much better team. He helps on the power play. He helps facilitate things on the blue line. So I think it's all good news for the Capitals. Brayden Holtby looks strong at the end there. So I think for right now, obviously no need to panic. It was just a shootout loss.
Yeah, and they'll have two more games in this round robin for seeding before they find out who they're going to play and actually start the playoffs with the first round officially. How do they get more out of the top six, do you think? It seemed like yesterday the bottom six carried them, and at even strength, some of their stars were pretty quiet.
Yeah, Alex Ovechkin kind of touched on this after the game. He said obviously this was kind of a wake-up call for the entire team. He knows that his line can do better. He knows the entire team can do better. It's just getting into that mindset. And honestly, for the Capitals, these three round-robin games are a time to shore up mistakes. It's a time to make sure everyone has got the systems down again. It's to make sure the legs are back. It's going against a real opponent for the first time in 21 weeks. So for the Capitals, I think the offense is going to come. I just think they need to keep their heads straight and just kind of focus in on these next two games.
Samantha, thank you. Always appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Let's talk some Nationals, please, Tommy. Charlie Slow's with us. You'll hear him when the Nationals play right here on 106.7 The Fan, calling the games. Charlie, Juan Soto is back. Hard for him to keep sharp when he's riding on a Peloton bike at home, but what are we expecting from the Nats' young superstar?
Well, you know, he got a lot of at-bats over the weekend in the simulated games, so hopefully he'll look as good as he did when he had the late start and seemed like he was ready to go off simulated games before opening day back on the 23rd, I think it was. We have a game tonight? Really?
It's been a while, so we don't know what to do. We don't know what to do with our hands. How about the pitching for the Nationals? I haven't really seen, you know, MLB.com still has to be determined for today. Why wouldn't they have just start the rotation over with Scherzer and go at their best that are available and on normal rest? Why would they kind of run back through the rotation? What are you expecting?
Well, Corbin is going tonight and Scherzer tomorrow. That's as much as I know to this point, because Corbin would have had the longest layoffs. I don't think they wanted him to sit. And when they let Max go as far as he did on pitch count last time out, they knew they had the luxury of no game until Tuesday or to even give him an extra day if they pitched Corbin on Tuesday. So that's pretty much why I think it's that way. And then hopefully, you know, Strauss is supposed to throw a full bullpen, I believe, tomorrow, which, you know, maybe he'll be okay to pitch sometime over the weekend.
That's what I wanted to get you an update on, is Strasburg. So we're hoping there. How much time do you think he would need after, you know, a couple of bullpens, clean bill of health, any ramp up, or are we just going to start him, put him on a pitch count maybe, Charlie?
Well, that's we'll wait and see how he feels after a full bullpen off the mound, throwing all of his pitches, and then wait and see how he feels the next day. And, you know, normally your bullpen is the day after you pitch, and then you have a couple of off days, and then you start. So we'll see if that's the regular program or whether they're a little bit more conservative. And, you know, the way we've seen all these injuries around Major League Baseball, especially to pitchers, you know, I think you'd see them more err on the side of caution.
To this point, as Drubal Cabrera's driven in a ton of runs, only hitting about .222, they're getting good production from Adam Eaton. Starlin Castro was red hot right before the shutdown. Robles hitting over .300. Who has stood out to you positively, negatively? Who do they need more out of? And who needs to stay hot in this lineup with Soto coming back?
Oh, they could all use staying hot, that's for sure. You know, I think, you know, in the absence of Soto, Castro was important. He was slumping before the four-hit game. They moved him back up in the lineup after that. You know, trying to find consistency in your lineup is the key. And I think Cabrera's batting average is deceiving because he's had a lot of hard outs. He's been maybe the most consistent. And, you know, they got some good at-bats from Carter Kieboom in the game against Toronto last Thursday. Showed the ability to take some close pitches and take walks. Also had a couple of hits. And I think he's looked good in the field, whether he's playing at third base or when the third baseman has to play on the right side of the infield on shifts. He's shown some good footwork. He seems relaxed. And, you know, that's a real good sign.
Charlie, thank you. Have a great call tonight. If, indeed, there's real baseball games to be played, I hope you're on the call. Thank you, buddy.
Real games. How about that?
Fun.
Let's do some baseball. Although, I mean, the way this season's going, maybe they'll get rained out or something for the next 3 days now. Who knows?
Someone tested Grant positive in Cleveland. No game.
On the Fan. I actually see some sunlight peeking through the windows in my basement for the first time in a couple of days. So that might be a good sign. We'll get to Juan Soto's return later in the hour. But next, Jack Del Rio, new defensive coordinator in Washington, says that he's ready to get this defense to the next level. Is he going to be able to? This is the Fan. Hopefully in its best interest. Here's the deal. I'm kind of over the Gardner Minshew stick, I'll be honest. Funny joke by Breer. I get it. But Jags quarterback Gardner Minshew's on the COVID-19 list. People love because he's got a mustache and he wears red pants to talk like do Chuck Norris jokes.
Pretty much.
Can he play a little football? Can we get him to throw a couple touchdowns and have a little success before we keep doing the Gardner Minshew bits? Or do we have to kind of put him in that category of Chuck Norris already? He's like a folk hero in Jacksonville, man. They moved on from Nick Foles. He's the starter there.
Yeah, Gardner Minshew doesn't have COVID. COVID has Gardner Minshew. I'm good on all that stuff. You know, like I'd like to win a couple games, look good for an extended period of time. Cool story. It's neat. They moved on from old Nick Foles there to give him a chance. But yeah, I'm pretty okay on Gardner Minshew shtick.
Andrew Billings of the Browns, the latest player in the league this afternoon to opt out, signed a 1-year, $3.5 million contract to play defensive tackle in Cleveland. Told them that he will not be playing this year. But you got multiple quarterbacks. You got a head coach now on the COVID list in the NFL. With our local team here in D.C., Jack Del Rio made the rounds with the media yesterday and was doing interviews with everybody. And I found that interesting for a couple of reasons. But, you know, he had a lot to say about this defense. He had a lot to say about the talent on that side of the ball. Danny, you know this. If this football team is going to compete this year, if they're going to surprise and win more games than people are expecting in that 7-8 range, if they're going to be in the mix to be a good story, it's going to have to be on the strength of this defense. Because even if Dwayne Haskins makes some of the big second-year strides we're hoping for after a strong offseason, at wide receiver it's McLaurin and not much else. At tight end you don't have impact players. In the backfield you've got Geis, potentially Love, Adrian Peterson. But you know, having a good running back room does not get you wins in the National Football League, does not score you points per se. The offensive line is pedestrian. You don't have a left tackle. You got questions at left guard. So if they're going to win, it's going to be 17-13 and 20-14. It's going to have to be thanks to Del Rio mixing potions with Chase Young and Ryan Kerrigan and John Allen and Deron Payne and Montez Sweat and Landon Collins on D. So it was interesting yesterday to see him come out and put a little pressure on his defense to be great.
Yeah, and even more specifically, you touched on it. It's really the front four. It's really that defensive line that needs to be excellent because I think they're weak at corner. I think they're weak at safety. I think they're pedestrian at linebacker. The only spot where this is the way it should be when you invest this much, 4 first-round picks in 4 years, plus Ryan Kerrigan, another first-rounder, on your pass rush, your guys up front, plus a guy that's had Pro Bowl caliber moments in Matt Ioannidis, that's where you're the best, and it's not close. Like, it's not close to any other position group. So they need to dominate games. The Chase Young plan, in order for this group to compete this year, needs to be he's so good that sort of that elevation that we talk about, like a great point guard making everybody else better, that needs to happen. Your corners have to play above what they've played for the most of their career. Your safeties, including an experiment in Sean Davis, who has all the toolkit, right, in terms of speed, athleticism, and smarts on the field, but hasn't stayed healthy. He's got to be great. This defensive line has to carry them, and not only just carry them, but be league-wide dominant for this group to have a chance week in and week out.
Yeah, because there's always been that debate of what helps the other more, the great D-line in the secondary or a secondary with, you know, a weaker D-line. The Washington Football Club almost had to put a dollar in the jar.
So close.
I think it's 4-0 right now. I'm still trying to hang on at zero, but I also have to overthink every single time. So, like, I'm hesitating
it's
a lot.
So unnatural. Yeah, it's so unnatural.
It's not a great situation for us. But point of the dude's story is the Washington Football Team right now has a D-line that should make those other groups a lot better. Now, let's go through the other two, and we'll come back to the D-line. The linebacker spot, you said that they are pedestrian. I'd agree with that. I think they have a chance to be pretty good, though. Cole Holcomb, for a fifth-round pick last year, played really well. Thomas Davis made over 100 tackles with the Chargers in L.A. John Bostic's going to be a second-year starter if he wins one of these jobs. He can run. He can tackle. He's fast. I like whatever he's going to provide. You kind of know him as a super smart guy. We were blown away when we sat down and talked with him. And that's a dude that's going to be in the league for a long, long time for character and athleticism, if nothing else. They drafted Kalik Hudson in the fifth round out of Michigan. He's going to make the team. He's going to play special teams. So those are your inside linebacker types. You could do a lot worse than that group. I would rate them as above average with the caveat that Thomas Davis, who's an ageless wonder, closing in on 40 years old now, doesn't take a huge step back. But they got speed there. I mean, they can run. Cole Holcomb and John Bostic are both fast players. Hudson is going to be a little bit more of that Josh Harvey Clemens in coverage. My major concern is the secondary. And I can't just isolate it to corner as badly as I want to because they don't have a starter next to Landon Collins who's proven. You mentioned what you called an experiment with Sean Davis. At least he's got a resume that shows that there was a season in Pittsburgh where he played really, really well on a great defense. So they got a shot at least. Let's say you get 32 starts from Collins and Davis to feel okay about that position with a special teamer, DeShazer Everett, and a guy who made the team and got some reps last year, Jeremy Reeves. That could be okay. I don't really see the same path. I don't see a situation where at the end of the year we feel like cornerback is professionally built or strong. Moreau's been way better outside than inside. So I have a small optimism that maybe he can be really impressive and surprise. He has to. No, it's him. Yeah. Kendall Fuller's in the nickel, which is where Jimmy Moreland's probably better off than the outside. I'm guessing that they're going to have Moreland compete against Ronald Darby, who they brought over from Philly as a starter. So just kind of spitballing here, Danny, I'm thinking Darby, Moreau outside, Fuller in the nickel, Moreland kind of the next guy up at either position, and then you've got Greg Stroman, who's still around, Danny Johnson, who's still around as roster hopeful types. But where does your confidence come from there? I mean, Fuller, when he's been on the outside, particularly in KC, really, really, really struggled. And Moreau, on good days, you go, oh, he might be an NFL player. Like, that's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah. So, again, the defensive line effect, that had better be so, you know, exponential that guys that haven't really done it are now able to do it at an adequate level. The key to me is what Jimmy Moreland is. If Jimmy Moreland turns into bona fide NFL cornerback, I'm not talking about Deion Sanders in his prime or, you know, anybody that's incredible, but if he's a real legit starter, not just a starter here, then it allows some of the flexibility that you can do with a Kendall Fuller. You could play him outside sometimes. He's primarily a slot guy. A lot of the teams of this division will line up at three wide receivers sort of as their base anyway. So it's an important role that he's got to occupy. You can have him follow around Sterling Shepard. You could do something where if Amari Cooper gets kicked inside, you don't feel terrible about having Moreau kind of work with him in there. Not Moreau, rather. Just blanked on his name. Kendall Fuller, et cetera. So what if Moreland graduates and isn't just cool story in training camp to like bona fide, then you'd feel a lot better about that group. But to me, there's nothing but questions after the defensive front. I'm more bearish on that linebacking core than you are. Thomas Davis is a Hall of Famer. He's a great player, but, you know, this is by far the twilight. And, you know, I'm hoping that you get some good play from some of the other guys to allow Landon Collins to not have to sort of stay at home and anchor and be away from the football, because that's not where he's very good. When he's allowed to come downhill and patrol, he's put up some amazing numbers just a few years ago in a Giants defense where he was allowed to roam a little bit.
Well, let me ask you this about the linebacking core, where it sounds like there's a little disagreement. I mean, to me, yes, there is no great player. If you're looking for a star, you're not getting that. That doesn't exist. But you don't think between Davis, who had, I think it was 112 tackles last year with the decent Chargers defense, Holcomb now going into his second season, John Bostic, year two in Washington as a starter, Sean Deion Hamilton, who I think's flashed a bunch, Reuben Foster is going to be on PUP and could come back. Khalik Hudson, who they just drafted. I mean, all for the inside spots. I just named six guys. You don't think that's a pretty decent core for a competition to get fine production?
I think they're okay at best. The people that do this for a living, that grade this sort of stuff, have them in the mid-20s. And it's not just Pro Football Focus. It's, you know, it's guys like Mike Clay or Mike
Sando. Those people
are
looking for names, and they're looking for star power, and they're looking for guys who can, you know, win you football games. I guess maybe our bars are different. That's a position to me, inside linebacker at this point. If you got Luke Kuechly, awesome. You got Ray Lewis, let's go. Let's ride. It's cool when you have London Fletcher. But if you're building a defense, you know, I'm probably starting with a pass rusher and a corner before I'm worrying about that. That's kind of where I'm at on it.
Oh, so am I. I mean, if I'm prioritizing, I'll take a pass rusher and a great corner before I take a middle linebacker 1,000 times out of 1,000. But they're off-ball guys, the strong side guys. I mean, there's, you know, just the top of my head, probably a dozen cores I'd rather have. And I haven't fully examined, you know, the linebacking depth of, say, like the Denver Broncos or the, you know, the some of the other teams just yet in order to compare them. But I'm not wowed by anybody. Cole Holcomb is a nice story. I'm glad that happened, that a fifth-round pick turned into a guy that can play in the NFL. Same with Deion Hamilton, another late-round guy. But to me, to say that this is above league average, I think would be erroneous.
Yeah, I'm not putting them above league average per se. I think you got a bunch of okay guys, and they're going to give you okay production. They'll be in the middle of the pack in the league, which with that defensive line is makes them, you know, as
good.
A sum of their parts as a front seven, probably give you, you know, more than you need. The question to me then becomes, where do your big plays come from? Who wins you football games? who takes over a game if it's not Chase Young? Is there someone on that defense? Your guys' thoughts next, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. You can tweet us as well on this defense under Jack Del Rio. We're G&D on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Thanks for listening on this Tuesday. Always appreciate you being a part of the show. You can call us at 800-636-1067 to give a thought on anything we're talking about. You can always tweet us as well, at Grant H. Paulson for me.
At Funny Danny for me.
We were talking Jack Del Rio after he made the rounds with the media yesterday and his defense. Here's my number one priority for him, question for him. Somebody hit me up and said, hey, what would you ask Jack Del Rio if you were talking to him today? I said, well, for me, the thing I care the most about, how is he going to get Montez Sweat, Daron Payne, John Allen, Ryan Kerrigan, Chase Young, and ideally Matt Ioannidis all on the field at the same time? How can you get 11 players, with an offense dictating terms and telling you what personnel has to be out there, how can you get all those guys out there to get the best results? Specifically, if you wouldn't really want to isolate it, you know, Payne, Allen, Ioannidis, put them in a blender, pick two guys on the interior, whatever. Chase Young, Ryan Kerrigan, Montez Sweat. All three of those guys that can get to the quarterback. Because I feel like for years here, Danny, at times, this team has had a chance to have two, three, four capable pass rushers on the field at once, and they haven't done it. There was a point where Junior Gallette at a, you know, per rush rating was one of the more successful guys in the league, and he just didn't play that often. That's what the really good defensive coordinators do. That's what I want to know from Del Rio. How do I get Sweat, Kerrigan, and Young to all be pinning their ears back at the same time?
100%. The challenge, and this is something that goes back to the artist formerly known as Redskins teams of old. Their two best players on offense for a while were Fred Davis and Chris Cooley. And it seemed like they couldn't figure out a way to get them both on the field at the same time. Right? Whereas New England said, yeah, we'll figure that out. We'll just go ahead and do that. We'll devise a scheme and a system. This is a similar deal, right? Whether it was Minuski or somebody else, where you had talented folks who could get after the passer a little bit, and you somehow just couldn't find a way to get them all in the field at once or utilize them in the best possible way, and they had to go somewhere else to thrive. Look at Preston Smith as kind of my example there. But it's a good problem to have, as opposed to who the hell's going to play cornerback or do I have a wide receiver? You know, you'd rather have more talent than not, and you can keep guys fresh.
If you've got a thought, you can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson and at Funny Danny. We're going to judge Chase Young on his rookie season based on his numbers. Those numbers are only going to be possible if he's playing a ton. I find it hard to believe he's not going to be on the field immediately on passing downs. So who isn't then? Now, in this perfect world, Danny, we can sit here and pretend like Del Rio's going to have them all out there. But realistically, there are going to be times when somebody has to sit, when someone has to watch. Is that the veteran Kerrigan, who until last year had never really had a down season, was a Pro Bowler every single campaign, you know, in the mix to go play in Orlando or Hawaii? Is it Montez Sweat, who came on like gangbusters in the second half of the season, in the second year of his contract? There's going to be an odd man out. I mean, what I hope to see is that NASCAR-type package where everyone's just kind of standing up, Rex Ryan defense, where you don't know who's coming and who's going. But you could say the same thing, too, about the defensive line, I guess. You know, if you have these extra edge rushers now, you know, where you want Anderson out there against the run, you want Kerrigan, Young, Sweat, and some combination against the pass, then you probably can't have Allen, Payne, and Ioannidis all on the field. So someone's got to sit. Who is that someone? And you're right about it being a great problem, but it doesn't mean you don't have to answer it. You know,
yeah,
at some point,
Del
Rio has to figure that out.
Yeah, it's got to be solved. And last year, just a couple numbers to throw at you. They were the Redskins then, so it's still correct to say that. They were 10th in the league in sacks overall, but 3rd in the league in pressure percentage. And sacks are a funny stat in so much as, you know, you look up at the top and you'll go, oh, my God, they were the best at rushing the passer. But down in and down out, they could have, you know, been fortunate a couple times and lucky. The things that you could sort of count a little bit better are quarterback knockdowns, hurry percentage, pressure percentage. And the Redskins were pretty good in that regard. And that was one of the reasons why I wasn't, you know, doing spin kicks when they drafted Chase Young like a lot of people were. I think that's an there's room for improvement there, but it's not that much in terms of getting up to the level of how New Orleans was, or the Steelers, who were great last year, the best pass rushing team in the NFL. 49ers can do it, and they did it without blitzing. The team needs to get to that level where you don't have to commit extra rushers, and that's kind of the idea of having that dominant front four.
So I agree with almost everything you said except the part that there's not that much room for improvement. I mean, they have not had in my lifetime a defensive player other than Sean Taylor for a stretch before he died that was petrifying to offensive coordinators. The idea of LeVar Arrington at one point after they drafted him, you know, because of some injuries and whatever else happened with his relationship with that coaching staff, it didn't quite pan out. But they haven't had Khalil Mack. They haven't had Aaron Donald. They haven't had Von Miller, who can single-handedly win you football games on that side of the ball. If Chase Young's that guy, then there's a hell of a lot of room for improvement. Then I think you're going to see it pay dividends for all of those guys and that entire front. And forgetting for a second kind of where you rank in this category or that category, you have to double him or he's going to beat you. And now that means one-on-one for Sweater Kerrigan and they win, or one-on-one for Alan Payne or Ioannidis and they win. So you're hoping for that type of overall impact. But you're with me, it sounds like, that Chase Young, they got to play him. Like week one, he should be getting a ton of snaps, particularly on passing downs. It would be ridiculous if he didn't.
When he's tired, he can come out. That's it. Or hurt, obviously. But he needs to play. I mean, this investment was so large, he needs to play from jump street. And you need to see. You need to know. And I want him to get double teamed. I want him to get triple teamed. I want to see how we deal with all of the things. I want the as big a sample as I possibly can for Chase Young, even if it's at the expense of other guys, even other first-round picks from different regimes. I need that guy on the field as much as he possibly can, to the point of reason, obviously, and keep him healthy, et cetera. But that guy needs to be on the field.
Yeah, and if he's getting doubled, chipped by a third guy or whatever, then you've won. Then the rest of that defense, because the other guys are good enough. Payne, Allen, Ioannidis, even Settle, you know, Sweat, Kerrigan, they're winning those matchups if he's taking on that type of attention. G&D on the Fan, Juan Soto playing his first game since he helped win the Nats a World Series today. We will speak about the return of Soto and our expectations for the kid who's all grown up at 21 next on the Fan. Juan Soto is one of baseball's next huge stars, but he's already one of the game's most respected young talents. 21 years old from Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic. In fact, my sister got married in the DR back pre-COVID. We left the country and all went to her wedding this winter. And I was wearing Nats gear and a Juan Soto t-shirt. They had, you know, very recently won the World Series, and he and Scherzer are my favorite players on the team, but I've got a couple of, like, Soto t-shirts and stuff. And I'm telling you, he is a legend there already. It's crazy. Now, I happen to be staying at the resort where he had his World Series party with all of his friends and family. So I guess there's a following of him in that area anyway. But, Danny, I mean, anything Curly W, anything Nationals, I got stopped by just about everybody working at the resort asking me about Juan Soto and the Nats right after they'd won the World Series. But he's never really struggled.
Awesome.
116 games after he got called up in 2018, and he had a .923 OPS. You know, last year, first full season, 150 games, 34 homers, 110 driven in, hit over .280, had a .950 OPS, and we know what he did in the playoffs and all the way into the World Series. He ended up hitting .280 with 5 home runs as a 20-year-old in the postseason in 17 games as he helped the Nats win the World Series on their run last year. He's now 21, and today, finally, we get to see the Soto shuffle. We get to see him grabbing at his cup and kicking dirt around as he's staring down pitchers in the batter's box. He is coming back from COVID.
They don't beat the Brewers without him. They don't beat the Dodgers without him. They might have beaten the Cardinals without him, honestly, the way that Cardinals series
was. Possibly, but, yeah. The Cardinals didn't score.
Yeah, so the Cardinals were getting – Juan Soto didn't pitch that series. But they certainly don't beat the Astros. There's no way. And he – every time something happened the opposite way, he did it. Whether it was the absolute ridiculous bolt off Gerrit Cole, whether it was the homer off Verlander, whether it was the wall-rattling, bases-clearing double Again, off of a pitch ankle high on the outside corner that he hit because he's just such a pure hitter. They don't win without him. He was absolutely incredible. We've been robbed of these of Juan Soto moments here in this COVID-shortened season through bureaucracy, technicalities, and otherwise. So I'm just glad he's healthy first and foremost. But selfishly, please put him in the batter's box and let him compete.
He's saying he had a false positive. I don't know how he would know that or how anyone would know that, and I'm not really sure that it matters. But his case is one that's important, I think, for baseball as they try to iron out some of the wrinkles in this whole situation, because he took a ton of tests. They were all negative. Then takes one test that's positive, and he had to miss 7 games, and it would have been a lot more, actually. It would have been like 10 or 11 games over close to 2 weeks for Juan Soto, as it were, I mean, because of the way the schedule worked out. Based on the one failed negative test that, in his opinion, was a false positive anyway. But the good news is he never really had any symptoms. He never felt sick at all. And from the people I talked to with the team, players and otherwise, I mean, he's just been going nuts. Like, he has desperately been trying to get back and be around the team. And he wasn't able to be, obviously. You have to be sequestered and quarantined. But finally this weekend he was able to work out. And you saw some of the pictures and videos coming out of he and Trey Turner cutting up on the field. I can't imagine what it feels like for these guys. There was a great story. I'm not even fully through reading it yet. I've read a little bit of it. It just came out while we were on the air today in the Washington Post about, do you remember Fernando Abad?
Yeah, of course.
So he's a pitcher who was trying to make the Nationals, who's actually right now on the Yankees. And he was trying to make the Nats roster in spring training, and there was a good chance that he was going to. But he ended up testing for COVID, and or having the symptoms and having to be separated, essentially. And he didn't have any issues in terms of his health. Like, he felt 100% fine. He didn't think anything was wrong. All he wanted to do was play baseball. And every single day passes, and he's going, I can't make this team. I'm not going to be able to make this team. He referred to it in the story as jail. You know, he felt like he was in jail. He was just basically being, for lack of a better phrase, locked away and quarantined in a room somewhere. And he just wanted to go pitch and make the roster, which he wasn't able to. Now, it's got a happy ending because it worked out for him that he ended up making another roster. But that could have easily led to him not playing this season, not being on a team. There's a lot of guys that might be in that boat. If you didn't make the 60-man rosters or what have you, or you just end up being sent to the minor leagues for the year and it cost you a ton of money. Soto was doing the same thing. He's kind of just, you know, kicking dirt around, ready to break things in the room, saying, let me out of here. I want to play. I'm fine. And as it turns out, finally today, he'll get his chance.
That's nuts, man. That's nuts. It's the type of thing that you don't think about, right? Because I'm sitting here been focused on Juan Soto and how many times he's tested negative, and that number still varies, by the way. It's a moving target. But you're right. I mean, there are people who are having major league dreams crashed by this, you know, where that's all it takes. If you're on the fringe, if you're the 23rd or 24th or 25th guy potentially on a ball club and you're trying to make it, how could somebody say, oh, yeah, I'll throw you on there for this sample, even though you're going to miss 3 weeks in all likelihood because you tested positive, and 3 weeks is a quarter of the season. You know, it stinks. I feel terrible for guys like that.
Wanted to point this out really quickly while we're talking about the Nats. I had mentioned Scherzer earlier in the segment. I go back and forth, honestly. On a day where Max pitches, he kind of catches up to Soto as my favorite player. The other 4 days, it's all Soto all the time. Those are the two guys I love the most for this team. But Nats Philanthropies tweeted this out a couple minutes ago. Thanks to a generous donation from Max Scherzer, all Youth Baseball Academy play participants are going to be receiving a baseball and a bat to participate, to practice rather their skills on their own time without being able to do a lot of the stuff they can currently do. So sets are now available for all the players in the Youth Baseball Academy program. But Max is donating balls and bats for everybody,
awesome.
Which is really, really cool for those kids. He does a lot of that kind of stuff. And a lot of people will just say, oh, he's got a lot of money. Yes, he does. And he also does a lot of good with all that money,
absolutely,
which should be celebrated.
Both can be true.
So cool thing that he pulled that off. G&D on the Fan, the final hour of the show, kicks off with the big one next right here on your flagship home for the Nats. We play tonight at 7 o'clock in the Cavs. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.